starts.
Maybe another opinion.
Right, so I wanted today to discuss Hanukkah. Coming up this week, God willing, this Saturday night, the first candle of Hanukkah. So it's good to get ourselves into the mindset of Hanukkah, of Yom Tov, when Yom Tov approaches. So you can come closer if you want. Just sit there. It's time to yell across the room. It'll be easier. We should be expanding even outwards. Take over the whole restaurant. So, right? Look at this. So it's important for every Yom Tov to understand and think about the ideas prior to the Yom Tov begins. Because a Yom Tov is all about what you put into it. We've discussed this idea many times, but if we prepare for a Yom Tov, understand the concepts, and then experience it, then it's a very powerful experience. If we just jump into Hanukkah, light our candles, and go off, so then we kind of lose that excitement and experience that Hanukkah has to offer, that impact. So it's very important with any Yom Tov, with Hanukkah especially, I think, to focus a little bit on the ideas beforehand, just so we understand what we're trying to accomplish, what's the message, what's the lesson of the holiday. First and foremost, every year, no matter where I speak, I introduce Hanukkah in the same way. You may have heard from me before, but I'll do it again because it's so important. I think it's the most misunderstood holiday out there in the greater community, both Jewish and non-Jewish. And it's, thank God it's a very popular holiday, which has to do with the time of year, as we know. It happens to be during the holiday season, as they call it. So Jews, even those Jews who are assimilated, are kind of grabbed as something for themselves as well. But the way it's presented, I think, in most arenas is an incorrect understanding of Hanukkah. The way we usually hear about Hanukkah, we talk about these powerful warriors called the Maccabees and how they rose up against their oppressors. And because they were such great warriors, they fought such great battles, they're able to overcome. And that seems to be the way it's presented. You have that there's a lot of sports teams we refer to the Maccabees. They make the Maccabiah games in Israel. It's the Olympics. That shows how strong. We've seen him modeling after these strong and valiant warriors called the Maccabees. That's, I think, the popular message of Hanukkah, which, if you read the sources, our tradition, the Talmud, the prayers, is 100% wrong. Because I'll read to you the quotes. It's the prayer. You can use a lot of different sources for this, but the prayer which we add in on Hanukkah, the Al HaNisim prayer, it's added in during the Shemona Esrei prayer. We add it in the benching of grace after meals. We add this in. And it describes the victory of Hanukkah. The way it describes it is, we thank God for the miracles. In the days of Matisyahu, the son of Yochanan, the high priest, and his children, when the evil Greek kingdom rose up against the Jews to cause them to forget the Torah and to bring them away from God's laws, you, God, in your great mercy, you stood up for them at the time of their distress. You fought their battle. You judged their judgment. You took their revenge. You place the strong in the hands of the weak, the many in the hands of the few, the impure in the hands of the pure, the wicked in the hands of the righteous, the rebellious in the hands of those who study your Torah, etc. So we think about these words for a second. It describes the Jews who are fighting as weak, as few, and God saved them anyways. It wasn't that we had mighty warriors. It wasn't that we had a great army. We had a tiny army made up of weak people. This is Chalashim. They were weak. And the reason that they won is for what it says next, because it was the impure in the hands of the pure, the wicked in the hands of the righteous, and the rebellious in the hands of those who study Torah. That's how we frame this war according to the rabbis. And there's many sources throughout the Talmud that the Maccabees, they weren't such strong warriors. They weren't a mighty army, but they had God on their side. They were devoting themselves, dedicating themselves for the sake of God, the sake of God's Torah, to protect our religious rights. And because of that, they were able to succeed in the battle. That's how the rabbis say it over and over again. And it's very clear that they were weak. So the way you should picture the army is not an army full of great warriors. Rather, picture some old rabbis, gray beards, Talmud in one hand, sword in the other, walking off the bat. That's how you should picture that war. And even so, we still won because that was the miracle of it. That it was the many in the hands of the Greeks. Well, that was the most powerful kingdom at the time. The Romans hadn't yet risen up to be so powerful, I think, in that time history. At this point, the Greeks were the world power. The Jews were a small, they made a small militia, basically, to rise up against the Greek oppressors. And this small militia was made up of the righteous, the Kohanim. They were the priests, the Kohen Gadol, the sages, and they're the ones who won the battle. So, the way it describes it as well is that it says, God, you fought their battle, you judge their judgment, you took revenge for them. Doesn't say they did anything. You know, I mean, obviously, they took the steps. They said, God, we're going to go fight for you. Please help us. And then God helped them out. So to picture them as these strong and mighty Maccabees, the way that you find these pictures and these, you know, descriptions, the rabbis say that's not true. It was really a miraculous victory based on their allegiance to Torah, their devotion, their willingness to sacrifice for the sake of God's Torah. That's why they won the battle. So Hanukkah's message is this unwavering commitment to the Torah, that God's will always persevere, even though at that time, the Jewish people was kind of in shambles. I mean, the Greeks had taken control over the Greek culture, especially, and the Greeks and their culture taking control over the land of Israel. The Jews in the land of Israel, many of them had already assimilated. There's Jews that we call Messiavnim, those Jews who become Greek. They're basically walking around like Greeks, and that's how they live, rejecting Jewish values, Jewish traditions. And there are those small pockets of Jews who maintain their beliefs, maintain their values. And at a certain point, they said, we can't take it anymore. There's too much religious oppression. We have to fight back against it. That's the story of Hanukkah. And the lesson is that, you know, if we persevere in our devotion to God, and we're constantly fighting to preserve God's Torah and God's laws and God's values, so that's going to elicit from God the love and protection and assistance that we need. It's not because we build up a great army or we're such skilled warriors, we have such military prowess. That's not what's going to achieve it. What achieves it is the devotion they had to God. They're a quintessential example of self-sacrifice on behalf of the Torah. That's what the Maccabees were. And many of them died. It wasn't an easy battle. If you contrast this to the Purim story, nobody died. There's not a single Jew lost their life in the Purim story. In the Hanukkah story, many lost their lives. Many of the family itself, the Hashmonaim family, it's recorded that some of them, Yehuda, died, and many of them died. I think Yochanan, I forgot all the names, but a few of the brothers who were fighting, they were killed in battle. It wasn't an easy war. It was a very difficult war. And even after, we think that the miracle, when they retook the temple, and they lit the oil, we think it's the end of the story. The battles went after that. It wasn't the end of the story. It wasn't easy even after that period. How long did it continue after that? I think it was on and off for several years, I think, after. I don't have the exact historical dates, but it wasn't easy after that. And even after the Hanukkah story ended, life wasn't back to being, you know, nice and rosy and smooth for the Jews. I mean, there was still a lot of disputes amongst the Jews. There was still a lot of external pressure from other countries. It wasn't an easy period in Jewish history. But Hanukkah was a light, you know, actually, pun isn't intended there. There was a light there, you know, in the middle of a very dark period of history where God said, even though things are so difficult and so many Jews are so depressed or down or distraught or persecuted, I still love you, even through that. That's what God tells us through these miracles of Hanukkah. It is a very, very tumultuous period of Jewish history, but yet you find this one episode which gives us a hope. It tells us that even when things are difficult, there's not peace, there's not love amongst Jews, there's Jews who are assimilating. I mean, you can compare it very much to our time nowadays. There's so much assimilation. Some people who have such a lack of Jewish education, lack of understanding of Jewish tradition and values. There's not peace amongst even Jews themselves. There's a lot of infighting amongst Jews, which was the same thing back in the time of the Second Temple. But God tells us, even in those times, I still love you, I'm still with you, I'm still care for you, and I'm going to help you persevere and make it through so that things can get back to their ideal state, which we're still waiting for right now. We're still not at the ideal state quite yet. We're trying to get there. So that's my intro to Hanukkah, which I think is just so important to put aside what pop culture throws you as the message of Hanukkah and understand what the rabbis tell you the message of Hanukkah is. Because pop culture, and even some Jewish organizations and leaders might present it to you differently. But the rabbis, the prayers, the Talmud present it as purely this, that they were devoted Jews who may have been weak and few in number, but they were devoted to God, and therefore they were able to pull through and be victorious in the battle. So to let's put it in context for a second. In terms of the holiday cycle of the Jews, we have two rabbinic holidays during the year. We have Purim and we have Hanukkah. Other holidays we celebrate are biblical in origin. Pesach, Shavuot, Sukkot, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, all biblical in origin. We have two rabbinic holidays, which is Hanukkah and Purim. Those holidays are that the rabbis saw these two events were not just two isolated events in history, but these are miracles which contained eternal lessons to them. I mean, we've experienced a lot of miracles in Jewish history, both in the most recent era and past, all through the thousands of Jewish history, there have been many, many miracles. The rabbis didn't stamp every miracle as a new holiday. There's only two holidays, two miracles they saw, which they said this is going to be a holiday for all generations. They saw the Purim miracle and the Hanukkah miracle as something that's worth being marked and celebrated yearly for the rest of history. So how do they understand that? Because they saw through their wisdom and divine inspiration, they saw that these two miracles weren't just isolated events, but these were epic victories, eternal lessons are relevant day in and day out in Jewish life. So you have to understand what these lessons are. So Purim's not our discussion today, but for Hanukkah at least, what did the rabbis see about Hanukkah that was such an important lesson? Hanukkah is unique, and it's the last holiday that the rabbis established. Purim was established during the period in between the first and second temple. During that, the Babylonian exile, the Jews were exiled to Babylonia and Persia. That's when the Purim miracle happened, as Purim was established. And there was a book in the Bible written about Purim. It goes Esther, is a biblical work written with the divine inspiration. And that is where Purim came from. Hanukkah is the latest event which we established the Yom Tov for. Hanukkah happened in the middle of the Second Temple period. There's no book in Tanakh about Hanukkah. There's even very little in the Talmud about Hanukkah. It's something which is not, there's basic sources in the Talmud about Hanukkah, but that's about it. Hanukkah is something which comes later in history and is not found in our writings. The message of Hanukkah is a message of religious persecution.
Catholics have it, don't they?
What?
Catholics have it, don't they?
They have what? The story of Hanukkah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, we do have two. I think what Phil's referring to, there's two books that are written in Hanukkah, but we don't deem those books as holy writings. There's the Book of Maccabees, and there's the Book of Antiochus, Nicholas Antiochus. The Book of Maccabees we would label as Apocrypha. So that's something which is a writing historically from about that time in history, but external to the Bible. We say that's not written at all with any Holy Spirit. It's not a holy writing. It's historical. It's no different to us than a history book. Megillas Antiochus, the sources seem to say that the rabbis composed that, but not to be part of Tanakh. So there's something called Megillas Antiochus, which tells the story of Hanukkah. And if you read through it, it does sound very similar to a lot of the rabbinic writings. And the source is from the rabbis, but yet they never intended for it to be part of Tanakh. They said this is not being written to be a holy writing. This is just to be a historical account of how the rabbis saw the battles of Hanukkah. So that's what we do have. But in terms of a holy book, a book of the Tanakh, of the Bible, that we don't have about Hanukkah. And again, the Talmud also has a short section about Hanukkah, but that's about it. For Purim, there's an entire tractative Talmud called Maseches Megillah, which deals with Purim. For Hanukkah, there's a few pages. That's all we have about Hanukkah in the Talmud. So it's a later holiday. It's a holiday which comes after prophecy. And it's a holiday which marks religious persecution. That the Greeks told the Jews, if you want to be Greek, you can be brothers with us, we're happy to have you, we'll welcome you in, but if you want to maintain your values, maintain your beliefs, then we're going to have to kill you. We can't stand for you maintaining your religion. That was the clash that they had before they rose up against the Greeks. The message of Hanukkah is supposed to come as the antidote to that message. I mean, we lived through our history, and we did have to endure a lot of religious persecution. Many, many times in history, our oppressors, the governments moving under, told us, we don't want you observing the Torah. We don't want you living as Jews. If you want to join us and live like everyone else, that's fine. We're happy to have you. If you maintain your beliefs, then we can't tolerate that. There have been times where they said, whether you're like us or not, we're going to kill you anyways. Like Hitler, Yamach Shemo. Hitler said, I don't care if you're a religious Jew or an assimilated Jew, I still want to kill you. But many others of history, they just want us to become like them. They don't want us to be so different. Why do you have to be so different? Why you eat your own food? You have to take off a day a week from work. Just be like you'll marry us. Be like us. You know, that's what they want out of us. So that was the struggle of Hanukkah. The message of Hanukkah is a message for the darkest times of history. I mean, Hanukkah, we talk about light, the light of Hanukkah. You light the menorah. But it's very notable that Hanukkah is during the darkest part of the winter. It always hovers around the winter solstice, always. Darkest part of the winter. Hanukkah, the mitzvah of Hanukkah is a nighttime mitzvah. If you think through your list of mitzvahs, most mitzvahs that are bound by time are for the day. There are exceptions to that rule, but you know, lulav is only during the day, shofar is only during the day. The service in the temple is only during the day. They didn't offer sacrifices at night, it's only during the daytime. Usually we call it daytime, because symbolically daytime is a time of clarity, time of warmth, time of the light of God shining to the world. Nighttime is a time of confusion, cold, darkness. Symbolically we understand that. And even in terms of most mitzvahs we have, the mitzvahs that are bound to a day or night, most of them are daytime mitzvahs. And there are a few exceptions to it. The Chanukah is a nighttime mitzvah. The mitzvah we do on Chanukah, lighting the menorah, is at night. If you light the menorah too early, you haven't done your mitzvah. You have to light it, you know, either towards the night or at night. It has to burn into the night for sure. So Chanukah is something which is symbolically in a very dark time of year, in the dark of the night, and the events happen in a very dark time of the Jewish history. And it was a miracle which happened when we were under the oppression of another kingdom. For Purim and Chanukah, we look at miracles of exile. Even though Chanukah occurred in the land of Israel, we view that as an exile because we weren't autonomous. We weren't in charge of ourselves at that point. So the miracle during a very dark time, a very very difficult time in Jewish history. And the lessons of Chanukah are supposed to teach us what keeps us going during these dark times. We talk about Jewish survival. It's a very common discussion nowadays. You know, Jewish continuity, Jewish survival. And everyone's trying to come up with their plans. How can, you know, we look at, you know, the intermarriage rate, we look at the rate of ignorance and assimilation. We say the numbers as we have it, the Jewish people are decreasing. And how are we going to allow the Jews to continue and survive? Chanukah is addressing that issue. Chanukah, the rabbis tell us that, look right now, Chanukah is a story of assimilation. Chanukah is a victory over that force of the Greek culture that's trying to assimilate the Jews. And the rabbis saw that as the final miracle through which they would establish a holiday. And the message the rabbis are giving us is the message that should last us throughout our exile. We've now been in exile for 2,000 years. And that miracle of Chanukah is supposed to carry us through. So how is that? What's going to keep us committed? What will keep us strong even through centuries and centuries of exile and gullus and oppression and persecution? What's survival? So I think the answer is very simple, and we'll see this as a major message of Chanukah. The answer is devotion to the Torah, period. Everyone comes up with different plans, you know, how we're going to keep Jews in the fold. The answer is very, very straightforward and simple. Jews who are educated, devoted to the Torah, they remain Jewish, they educate their kids, they're excited about it, it's meaningful to them, that's Jewish continuity. Jews, no matter how Jewish they claim to be, if their allegiance isn't to Torah and Jewish tradition, so if it's not them, it's their kids or their grandkids, God forbid, that are assimilated and marry away and are lost. That's the very straightforward answer. Chanukah is showing us that those Jews who are committed to God's laws and God's Torah, those are the Jews who are able to persevere and survive. And that's the message that we have. The mitzvah we do of Chanukah, laying the menorah, is supposed to symbolize this. The menorah in the temple, there are many different vessels in the temple. You had a menorah, there was the table with the showbread, Shlach Lapanim, there was the altar which they burned the incense on. In the Holy of Holies you had the Holy Ark. Everything symbolizes its own thing. The menorah symbolizes the wisdom of Torah. That's what the menorah symbolizes. The rabbis tell us that if you're praying and you want to pray for wisdom, so you should pray, you should kind of position yourself facing towards the south. Why? Because the south is where the menorah was positioned in the Beis HaMikdash. It was positioned in the south, and the menorah symbolizes wisdom. And therefore, if you want to pray for wisdom, you should position yourself towards the south. That's what the rabbis say. You know, they used to have a publication, I grew up in Atlanta, a publication called Torah from Dixie, it was called. Torah from Dixie. And the blurb on top of Torah from Dixie said, he wants to be wise, should turn south. That's what it said, according to that Gemara. You know, obviously, the south talking about is not Georgia, we're talking about other south, but, you know, that was their quote. But that's, the menorah represents wisdom, Torah wisdom. If you want to gain Torah wisdom, you turn south. We have a verse in the book of Proverbs that says, "Ki ner mitzvah Torah or." A mitzvah is a candle, and the light is Torah. Because the light of the menorah represents Torah. Light is Torah. It says that the miracle was Zaydim Yat Uskei Sorsecha. It was the rebellious in the hands of those who involve themselves in your Torah. That was the miracle of Chanukah. God saw the merit of Torah carries us through the persecution, through the assimilation. The miracle came through the Kohanim, the priests. Matasiyahu and his family were the family of the high priest. And traditionally, the Kohanim were the ones who taught Torah. There's a verse that says, Sifsei Kohen Yishmeru Das. That's the lips of a Kohen. They're the ones who guard wisdom. But Torah says, Hashem Yivakshu Mipiyu. You should request God's Torah from their mouths, because the Kohanim were supposed to be teachers of Torah to the Jewish people. So it was those who taught Torah, those who studied Torah, they're the ones who were able to win the battle. And the actual mitzvah, the observance that we continue to this very day is lighting the menorah, which symbolizes the Torah wisdom, that's what it symbolizes. If you look throughout history, I think it's 100% clear, that we could survive without a Jewish king. That we haven't had a king for millennia. We could survive without prophets. You know, even by the time of Hanukkah, prophecy was already gone. No more prophecy anymore. We could survive without the land of Israel. You know, we didn't have the land of Israel for many, many centuries, and the Jewish people survived. The one thing we can't survive, we can survive without a temple. We haven't had a temple in 2,000 years, we're still here. Without the allegiance to the Torah, we cannot survive. That's the message of Hanukkah. Allegiance to the Torah is what, that brings Jewish survival. That's all it is. We say in on Yom Kippur, and around Yom Kippur as well, in the Slichos, there's a quote. It says that, I don't have it with me, it says that the holy city is destroyed. There's no more prophecy. We don't have proper people to even daven for us. We don't have all the sages we used to have. But all we have left is our Torah. That's what we have left. But because of that, we're still here. Our allegiance to Torah is what keeps us and sustains us. And that's the miracle of Hanukkah. The wisdom of Torah is always going to, and you can use the metaphor, but that vanquishes the light, takes away the darkness. The light of this darkness, exile is darkness, persecution is darkness. Hanukkah is a time of darkness. We're in the dark winter, the dark night, but the light of Torah is going to illuminate it all for us. That makes everything clear, and we understand our purpose, what we're here for. That's the message of lighting the menorah. In the tefillah I read for you before, it says, what were the Greeks trying to do? It says, Lashkicham Torah Secha, to cause us to forget your Torah, and to make us veer away from your desired laws. That's what they were trying to do. They wanted us to forget the Torah and forget God's laws. And that's what we fought. We fought for the Torah, for God's laws. We risked our lives, and we died for it. And may die for it, just to negate these decrees. So celebration of Hanukkah has to take on that message. If we were fighting for God's Torah, fighting for God's laws, and we won, so celebrating Hanukkah means I'm renewing my commitment to God's laws. That's what it means. Why did the Maccabees fight? They didn't fight for autonomy. They fought for, they wanted to be able to observe the Torah. That's what they fought for. So if we're celebrating Hanukkah, we have to rejoice in the fact that we do have freedom to observe the Torah. I mean, thank God we live in America which promotes freedom of religion, and Jewish life is able to thrive in America. And we should be especially thankful for that. And that's the Hanukkah is the time where we fought for religious freedom, and we achieved it. And now that we're celebrating Hanukkah, we need to embrace the Torah and observe it once again, and observing God's mitzvahs. I don't mean to be cynical, and I don't mean to put anyone down. But a lot of times you see, let's say, an extremely assimilated secular Jew promoting Hanukkah. And for them, promoting Hanukkah isn't because they're using it to embrace the Torah. But if you ask that person, why did the Maccabees fight? Why do we have Hanukkah? The answer is because they want to observe the Torah. So a person who's trying to promote Hanukkah, who's a very assimilated and secular Jew, the question we pose to them, why are you celebrating Hanukkah? If they're fighting...
Like Obama.
The White House... You know, again, I don't mean to put anybody down, but if you picture a scene like that, it's kind of, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? It's a contradiction in a sense. I mean, I don't want to put down anyone's observance of mitzvahs or anyone's promotion of Jewish tradition. That's for sure valuable, but just it's a little bit incongruous to see a person who is so proud to promote Hanukkah, but yet if the Hanukkah is all about fighting for the Torah and fighting for observance, and this person is not themselves devoted to Torah observant, it's kind of an incongruous scene. That's the point. I think it's important just for us to keep in mind.
That's true.
And it is amazing when we talk about Hanukkah as a time of Jewish survival and perseverance, that we say, you know, it's around the Christmas season, so all the Jews are kind of grabbing at their religion. But there's no point to this in God's world. In God's world, we believe that God runs the world. Why is Hanukkah the holiday in this time? Because Hanukkah is that holiday which is supposed to keep us Jewish, supposed to help us persevere through assimilation. So it happens to be even the most assimilated Jew, when Hanukkah comes around, they're now, you know, refreshing their Jewish identity. That's what they do. So we'll say it happens to be during Christmas season, but there's nothing that happens to be in God's world. You know, God sets things up how it's supposed to be. And there's a reason, the reason that the seasons coincide, because it makes even the most assimilated Jew identify at that point. They have to go to the holiday party at work, and they're known to be, they're the Jewish guys, so they have to be proud of Hanukkah. They have to be proud of being Jewish at that point. The rest of the year, they may not be observant, but at least now they have to identify as a Jew. So it's because Hanukkah is that holiday which is supposed to keep us from assimilating, just to keep us strong, keep us devoted to God's mitzvahs and God's Torah. You have a question?
Yeah, yeah. Just an observation. If you go to CVS, I can see it. The Hanukkah section, And they had, stocking, they had a stocking for Hanukkah.
Oh, really? Okay.
I think it was CDF. They have
like Hanukkah stocking. Okay. So yeah, that's kind of taking over the line, but it's a little bit too far.
Maybe we could have it white and blue.
Right. It wasn't a red and green stock. It probably was white and blue, yeah. Right.
I mean, Christians tell me that to them, the most important, the holiday they know is Hanukkah. To them, that's the most important Jewish holiday is Hanukkah.
Right.
Because that's the one
it's the most
know.
Famous.
It's the one they know about. You don't hear about, how many people do you hear about Purim? Purim
right.
In the outside community, Purim comes and goes.
Right.
So Shavuos, the Jews don't even know about. So
right, I mean, absolutely. But everyone marks Hanukkah. Because, right.
You can't pick up a newspaper that's not selling you something for Hanukkah.
Right. Especially nowadays, because it's not politically correct to leave out a certain religion. So if you're saying Merry Christmas, you have to have Hanukkah too. So even though Jews are, you know, 0.5% of America, and Christians are 98% of America, but still, you have to mention everybody in your ads. So they're saying Merry Christmas, you have to have Hanukkah also. But we see Hanukkah keeps Jews in the fold. Hanukkah, I have to identify during Hanukkah. I can't just remain another person during Hanukkah, because everyone's going to say, come to our party, our holiday party in the office, you know, come celebrate with us. So there are those Jews, unfortunately, who are willing to celebrate Christmas too, which, you know, but a Jew who's not willing to go that far is going to have to identify themselves at that point. The another message of Hanukkah, which a very similar and very related message, is that Hanukkah needs to bring out a Jewish pride and a gratitude for being Jewish. And we risked our lives for Torah observance on Hanukkah. If not, I mean, the Jews could have just said, let's throw in the towel. You know, they want us to assimilate. Okay, we'll assimilate. We'll be Greek. You know, Greek society was, you know, Greek was the power of the world. It was a very prominent, wealthy society. It was cultured. It was artistic. You know, Greek architecture, you know, Greek philosophy, that's still what we live with this very day. I mean, all of our culture was based on ancient Greece. It was a very high and prominent society. You know, Jews might be tempted to join. Even based on rabbinic sources, the reason that Greek society was an attraction to Jews is because, you know, Jews also were very literate and cultured people. So for them to say, I'm going to just become an illiterate peasant, why would they want to join a society like that? But Greek culture, that was very attractive to a Jew, because I could still be a literate, cultured, you know, intelligent, you know, member of society. But instead of keeping my Jewish observances and studying my Jewish books, I'll study the Greek books. So it was actually a contender. You know, it wasn't Jews did not want to become Persian. We don't have a record of Jews who wanted to be Persians or Babylonians. We have a record of Jews who wanted to become Greek, because, you know, Babylonian culture, Persian culture didn't contend with Torah, with the Torah values. But Greek values, you know, it was in the same, let's call it, you know, the same ballpark in a sense. You know, they had that appeal to Jews. So that was a problem. So the Jews could have said, we'll become Greek, we'll be Greeks, what's the big deal? But the Maccabees said, no way. We have to fight and risk our lives to make sure that we persevere and observe the Torah. So we have to, at Hanukkah's time, we have to kind of bring out our Jewish pride. I'm proud to be a Jew. It's a special privilege to be a Jew. I'm not willing to give it up for anything. At the cost of my life, I'm not going to give it up. It's my privilege. It's my love in life. It's my devotion. We have a mitzvah on Hanukkah. We light the menorah. Part of the mitzvah is called Persumei Nisa, to publicize the miracle. It's a very interesting thing. You don't find that in most Jewish observances. Usually, we believe in, you know, let's be modest, focus inwards. You know, your Passover Seder to the comfort of your own home at your table. You blow the shofar. We don't blow it out in the street. Blow it in the shul. You take your lulav. You can do it anywhere you want. You don't have to do it in public. There's a very prominent, prevalent idea of Hanukkah, which is called Persumei Nisa. You're supposed to publicize the miracle publicly. You know, there happens to be the concept exists for Purim and Pesach as well. The rabbis mentioned there's a concept of Persumei Nisa, publicizing the Pesach miracle through the four cups of wine, and publicizing the Purim miracle through the Megillah. But those are all inward. You don't go out to the streets and proclaim the Megillah. You do it to all the Jews in Shul together. When you drink your four cups of wine, you're doing it with your family and your Seder table. So that's still, the purpose of it is to publicize God's miracles, but only within, to our own limited crowd. Hanukkah is really the one time I'm aware of where we're supposed to specifically publicize it to the outside. Ideally, the way they still do it in Israel to this very day is you're supposed to light the menorah outside. And they still, if you go to Israel in Hanukkah, everyone lights it outside. They have these special fish tanks they use so that it doesn't blow out in the winds, and they light it outside. Because the actual mitzvah of Hanukkah is supposed to be an outside mitzvah to publicize to the world God's miracles. In the diaspora, so because of our concern for persecution, anti-Semitism, we started lighting inside, and we still do it to this very day. Even though, thank God, that's not a concern in America these days. And we still put it in the window, even just so we can get some of that publicity in. But we're still fulfilling the custom of trying to keep it inside the house because of our fear of persecution. But ideally, the mitzvah of Chanukah, and even we do it on our windows, is our custom. We're publicizing it to the outside world. And it's a fascinating thing. And it's because that Chanukah, the message of Chanukah is the message of Jewish pride. I'm so proud that I'm a Jew. I'm so thankful for God's providence and God's miracles and the fact that we've been sustained for all these years. The fact that we're still doing God's mitzvahs this very day. I'm so proud of that. I want to show it to the world. I want to show my pride. The famous commentary, the Bach, he's one of the commentaries written on the Torah, one of the works of Halacha, named Rabbi Yoel Sirkis. So he writes that, why did the persecution of Chanukah, like, what's the spiritual cause of the Chanukah persecution? So we can describe the historical causes. You can read a history book and they'll tell you about ancient Greek society and how they took over the land of Judea. On both ends, there was, you know, the Greek culture had made it into Egypt and also up into Syria, and there was a closing in on the Jews, on Israel. But what was the spiritual cause? I mean, nothing happens in the physical world without a spiritual cause. God allowed this to happen to us. Why? So he says that the Jews became very lax and lazy in their service of God. That's what he says. And the only way that we could rectify that problem was through giving up our lives for God. We had to now fight back and devote our lives for the Torah. We were lax and lazy about Torah. And God says, you're going to have to now put yourself on the line and show me how devoted you are. So the observance of Chanukah is that, but why are we so lax? Because if you're not excited about something, it's not your passion, you're lazy, you're lax about it. So it's your passion, so you're not lazy about it. You know, anything you're excited about, you're not lazy about. So we had this idea that we were kind of, you know, we weren't so passionate about Judaism, we weren't so into our service of God, we were lazy, we were slow, we were lax. So Chanukah now, the answer to that, the antidote, is to show our excitement of being Jews, to show our pride, to show that how unique it is what we do. So so the Maccabees fought, and they fought for God's Torah. They showed that we love doing your service, we love just keeping the Torah. They fought and they succeeded. God said, I'll reward you with the ability to do my mitzvah. They let the menorah last for 8 days. God said that I'm going to give you a reward in your observance of mitzvahs because you showed me your devotion to me now. So even in a case where the mitzvah should not have been able to be completed, God allowed it to be completed by letting the menorah burn for 8 days. In our observance also, we have to show our excitement. Chanukah is a time, like I'm saying, of Jewish pride. So I'm so proud and excited to do God's mitzvahs. I'm so proud to be a Jew. I open up my window and I show the whole world, look at me, I'm Jewish and I'm proud of it. You know, God takes care of me. I have God's Torah. And it's unique and I'm excited about it. The other mitzvah of Chanukah, the rabbis tell us, it's time for lehodos lehalo. Time is to give gratitude and praise to God. That's the label of the holiday. Because I'm showing gratitude and praise to God and the fact that I'm a proud Jew. I'm so happy that I'm still here and able to observe your Torah. You allowed us to overcome the Greek oppressors and not become assimilated and still observe your Torah. I'm so happy this very day I still have that opportunity. It's still there for me. There's a very interesting quote from the Rambam, Maimonides. The Rambam is, in his book, the Mishneh Torah, it's a halachic work. He's usually very cut and dry and technical. You know, this is okay, it's not okay, in this situation, do this. When it comes to Chanukah, he uses a term which is uncharacteristic for him. He says that Mitzvah of Chanukah, he says, it's extremely dear to the Jews. He gives it that adjective. It's extremely dear to us. There's no other mitzvah the Rambam describes as an extremely dear mitzvah to the Jews besides lighting the Chanukah menorah. But the Rambam says Chanukah is chaviv. It's very, very dear, precious to us. Because that's exactly what Chanukah is supposed to be for us. Chanukah is a time where we show, it's so precious to me to be Jewish. The Torah is so precious to me. Being able to serve God and do God's mitzvahs is so dear to me. I feel the pride and the privilege, the uniqueness of being Jewish. We can't ignore the fact that we're a chosen nation, that we're different, we're special in God's book. I feel good that I'm special. I know it's not politically correct to say that we're different, but we have to acknowledge as Jews that we are different. We're given a special mission by God. No one else is worse than us, but we're given special responsibilities and privileges, being that we're Jewish, and God's chosen people. We got God's Torah. There's a very interesting Mishnah, which is quoted. The Mishnah says that when the Greeks came to attack the temple, they poked 13 holes in one of the walls called the Sorig. So, I mean, they came into the temple. Doesn't say knock the wall down. They put 13 holes in a special wall called the Sorig. So we know in this story, they came into the temple, they defied all the oils. But why did they bother spending time to poke holes in this wall called the Sorig? So the idea of 13 is that, well, that's a separate discussion, why 13? There's this deep symbolism of 13. But what's the symbolism of this wall? So the rabbis teach us that what was the purpose of this wall? This wasn't the main wall around the Temple Mount. It wasn't the wall of the temple. This was an additional wall. So this wall was supposed to be the dividing line between Jew and non-Jew in the Holy Temple. Non-Jews come to the temple as well. Non-Jews could offer sacrifices to the temple. That was, we accepted it. It's totally fine. We encouraged it. It should be a place where every person in the world comes to acknowledge God. And that's what the temple was there for, not just for Jews. But there was a line drawn and said non-Jews can only come until here. Past that, needs to be Jewish. And the Greeks said that that to us is, you know, is called racism. That's terrible. Why can't I come in? So they poked holes in that. And they said that we hate this wall. This wall, which is going to separate Jew from non-Jew, we think that's a terrible thing. That was the message of the Greeks poking holes in a special wall called the Sorig. But the message to us is that they poked holes in it, but we rebuilt that wall. That wall is supposed to be there. Number one, in terms of assimilation, we have to make sure that wall is there. And Hanukkah, again, is the fight against assimilation. But number two, even though, you know, those people who are here obviously are committed Jews who are interested and knowledgeable in learning Jews and observant Jews, but the idea of this wall for us is the fact that we have to be proud of who we are. We have to understand that we're unique. We can go further into God's temple. A non-Jew can only come to here. We can go further because we have a special mission, we have a special privilege, we have a special gratitude for being Jews, which a non-Jew can't have. So they poke holes in it, and we say that wall is very precious to us. We rebuild that wall once again. They said, you should be like us. Everyone should be the same. We want you to be Greek. Greeks and Jews shall be the same. And we say that, you know, we're proud to have our own mission and goals in life. You know, Judaism is one religion which actually allows others to remain not Jewish and still affords them a place in the world to come. If you ask a believing Christian, where am I going to go? They say straight to hell. You don't accept, you know, Jesus, and you go straight to hell. Jews say you don't have to be Jewish. You can be non-Jewish. You can observe the 7 Noahide laws, and you have a place in the world to come. You have your own special eternal rewards. You're a good person. The Mishnah talks about the righteous of the nations. They have special places in the world to come, and that's totally fine. But we have to understand that they're allowed into the temple, but only so far because we're able to go all the way in. I mean, we couldn't even go in. Only the Kohen got all the way in. You know, even for Jews, if there's a line for a Jew, so a normal Jew can go to here, and a Kohen can go to here, and the Kohen can go to here on Yom Kippur. That's how it worked. So everyone has their lines drawn. But we don't say everyone's equal. We say that certain people are given special responsibilities, special privileges that they should be proud of and they should be thankful for. So that's part of this message of Jewish pride, which comes with Hanukkah. The mitzvah of Hanukkah, the miracle is with oil. Ideally, the best way to light our menorahs are with oil. Candles are fine, but oil is the ideal way to do it. And oil is something which is very interesting, that oil doesn't mix with water. We all know you put oil into water, it flows to the top. Because the message of Hanukkah is to understand that Jews cannot mix in. Jews can't assimilate, and Jews have to be proud that they're always going to be floating up a little higher than non-Jewish society. We have to be proud that way. And there's nothing wrong with water. Water is a very important part of life, and water gives us life. But the oil floats the top of the water. So if you try to mix, part of the message, if you try to mix oil with water, it doesn't work. Jews who try to assimilate and remain Jewish, either, God forbid, you have something, you know, you have non-Jews who come to persecute them and pull them out of a non-Jewish society, or they're lost and they become non-Jewish, one of the two. But it's very hard to find Jews who, at least over the course of several generations, could want to be exactly like non-Jews, but yet identify as Jews. The oil is going to float back up the top again. That's part of the message. The other symbolism of oil is that oil always leaves a residue. In water, you pour water out of a cup, so it dries up in the residue. Oil, you pour it out, there's always a residue in the bottom. And the message of that is that the Jew has an impact on the world in a way that we're supposed to leave our mark. And historically, it's totally true. Historically, Jews have left their mark everywhere they've gone, both, you know, in all areas, in science, in math, in philosophy, in ethics, in morality, in finance, everything. You know, I think they say that there's a large percentage of Nobel Prize winners who were Jewish. Was it 30% or something were Jewish Nobel Prize winners? I think it's like 4/10 of presidents of Ivy League schools are Jewish now. I mean, obviously, we've left our mark in society in a lot of different ways. But Jews are going to leave their mark no matter where they go. It's also very interesting to think that Jews are always seem to be at the very heart of where history is being made. You look throughout all of history. And I was listening, I was listening to a lecture from Rabbi Ken Spiro, I believe, who said this. Ken Spiro, he teaches at Isha Torah in Jerusalem. He's a well-known historian. He's a great speaker, very interesting. I recommend him. He has a whole series called... called what do you call it? World Perfect, he calls it. which are his seven different ways the Jews have made the world a different place. But I think he's the one who mentioned, which if you think through it, it makes a lot of sense, that history is always happening where the Jews are. If you look at history at any point in time, wherever the major events of history are is where the Jews are living at that time. So now it's America and the Middle East. That's where you see world history happening. That's where Jews are. You know, you go back and it was, you know, you had it in Europe. You had it. That's where world history always seems to be. The focus of the news and world history is always on where Jews are living. It's a very interesting thing. And Jews leave their mark in many ways wherever they go. Our goal is to be that light unto the nations and leave our mark of God and sanctity and morality. That's our ultimate goal. We leave our mark in other ways also. That's not necessarily our mission. Our mission is to leave our mark as the light unto the nations and morality and sanctity. But that's the part of oil. Oil is the message of Hanukkah, which is that oil leaves its mark no matter where it hits. Oil never mixes in. It always floats to the top. It doesn't mix with water. And ultimately, our job, we light these candles. You know, this coming Saturday night, we light our candles for Hanukkah. So why am I lighting that candle? That candle represents the light of the Torah. That oil represents the Jew who will never assimilate, the Jew who will always rise to the top and feel special and privileged to be Jewish. And then the other part of Hanukkah is the gratitude and praise to God and the fact that we still, to this very day, have that religious freedom. We still have the ability to observe the Torah, study the Torah, to keep the Torah. And I would add in, especially, you know, we live in America, which is a society of total freedom of religion. You hear, even to this very day, you know, that they outlawed ritual slaughter in many countries in Europe now. I mean, you do hear things even to this very day of religious persecution. Anti-Semitism is much more rampant in the countries than we have it here, thank God. I mean, it exists here too, but it's nowhere nearly as rampant as is in Europe, especially in the Arab countries, for sure. But that's the... But I mean, us as Americans, I think we have a special measure of thanks for the religious freedom that we have while living in America to this very day. That's what Hanukkah is all about. So, I want us just to leave with that, just to recap our messages. We first, you know, Hanukkah is not about the power of the Maccabee, the warrior who's such a skilled military, had the skilled military prowess. It's about God's hand in supporting and helping those who are devoted to the Torah. It's the message of the light of the Torah. The victory is won by the priests or teachers of Torah. The menorah itself symbolizes the Torah. And it's a message of Jewish pride. And this is what sustains us. The rabbis are teaching us that how are you going to be sustained during the exile? We've been out of the land of Israel for 2,000 years. We haven't had a temple for 2,000 years. No Jewish king. No prophecy. None of that. What's going to keep us? It's devotion to the Torah. That's it. The question of Jewish continuity. The answer is to find people coming around and saying the answer is Jewish education, which is the answer. And people are finally coming around to that. You know, that answer was not so necessarily the obvious answer to the question 20 years ago. I think everyone understands now the answer to Jewish continuity is Jewish education. And it means education about God's Torah. That's what it means. Those of Jews who are devoted to God's Torah are here. And those who are not devoted, you know, God forbid, those are the ones who risk that assimilation. But we always have to be like the oil and never mix in, always float to the top. Yeah.